Episode 428. Top 10 things about Star Wars The Force Awakens.
Yeah.
I feel like that started out well and didn't finish well.
Welcome to the Sci-Fi Christian, bringing you theology at warp speed. I'm Ed Ederson.
And I'm Ben DeBono. We're back in the saddle, everyone.
Back, taking a hiatus from the hiatus to give you guys what you've been demanding, Star Wars The Force Awakens movie review.
That's right.
However, we know all the podcasts are doing movie reviews of this movie. Everybody's seen it. You don't need us to go step by step over what happened. So here's what we're doing.
Oh, no. We don't want to recap it.
No. We're doing top 10 things about Star Wars The Force Awakens. Now, here's how this happened. Ben and I got together this past weekend. We actually met up with one of our friends slash listeners, Dan Ford from Chicago. He was in town visiting Ben. And you guys were saying some negative things about the movie. Whereas I loved the movie.
Right.
So I thought, okay, how about if we do... I'll say some good things. You can say some bad things. But then I found out you actually had some good things to say, too.
Okay, so I want to make sure this is clear up front. I did like the movie.
Okay, liked it.
I don't hate this movie.
I loved it. So for me, 5 stars. I'm just going to get that out of the way. 5 stars.
There's no way this is a 5-star movie.
What did you think it was?
I'll give it 3 stars.
So we're going
to... This is a very flawed movie. Well, we'll get to it.
So, yeah. So, I have 5 good things. You have 5 good things. And then you have 10 bad things.
That's right.
So, top 10. We're going to start with the positive, because that's a nice way to kick it off. And I told Ben I'll let him have the last word with the negatives.
Okay. Well, you can chime in on the negatives, too. Because I don't think that... I know you had a 5-star experience. I don't think that you actually think this is a 5-star movie.
I see what you're saying. So, do you want to elaborate? Should I elaborate on that right now? Or should we
It's a lot of people.
Because that's exactly what I told you. So there we were at Five Guys Burgers, if you guys are familiar with that restaurant. And I said that exact thing, I loved it. I saw it twice now. Both times, really enjoyed the experience. I enjoyed the movie. If I had to be nitpicky and really dive into the ins and outs of the story and all that stuff, I'm sure I could. Say, okay, this is
there's
not...
more than just nitpicks. There are huge problems with this movie.
What I'm trying to say is I'm sure I could say this is not like a perfect movie. Okay, I get that. But the experience is part of it. And for me, 5-star experience.
Okay, but I think people are having a hard time separating those two. Mm-hmm. And I think we have to if we're going to actually talk about is this a good movie. A lot of people had 5 stars experience watching Phantom Menace.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
All right.
Now, but maybe, you're 5.
Maybe we should talk about our experiences, because...
We did have different experiences,
I went there, not opening night, but the next day, so my boss at work was kind enough to let me sneak away for an extended lunch break, so I actually went at 12:30 on Friday, December 18th, which is technically opening day, even though tons of people saw it the night before.
Right.
I was there with a group, there was 8 of us total.
Okay.
To my left, I had Ryan Strelo of Ryan Strelo Studios, as well as former Sci-Fi Christian host Kobe Radcliffe.
Right.
To my right, I had my lovely wife, Dez. And then to her right were some of our friends from Bible study.
Okay.
So, big group. The theater was packed.
Yeah.
I'm so excited about this movie. I mean, I was just looking forward to it all week. Couldn't wait for Friday to come. Not when Lucasfilm came on, because the very first image you see is Lucasfilm.
Yeah.
But then when it switches to a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, my theater, I wouldn't say erupted in applause, but there was a steady clapping and just the energy was good in that theater. Then throughout the film, people were laughing at the right places, cheering at the right... Well, I shouldn't say cheering. You know what I mean? Like, they were excited. Another time that people started clapping out loud in the middle of the movie, which, that's kind of a... unique experience is when Han and Chewie first entered the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, when they walked in and said we're home, theater cheered. I want to say cheered, but it was more mild cheering because you're in a movie theater,
right?
But lots of clapping. I think there might have been clapping at the end, but not as much as at the beginning. The energy was great. And can I just tell you a few extra things? I told you this already, but I want to tell the audience, right. I do not consider myself an emotional person, but I think I got kind of caught up in the emotion of
I think you did
what
too.
Was happening here, which was, it's not just another Star Wars movie, because we've seen that. We saw episode 1, 2, and 3. But it's the original cast back on screen. So when this movie's starting, you know, you, a long time ago, blah, 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 and then Star Wars comes on, and then the crawl is on the screen. The word that was in my head is surreal. This just felt surreal. I can't believe we're going to see Luke, Leia, and Han, Chewie.
Yeah, but this is my point. You point, you'd already decided. This was already, there was no way it wasn't going to be 5 stars for you at that
point.
That's
not true. That's 100% not true.
That's 100% true.
I couldn't believe that we were going to see them in a movie again. So I just, and there were different times throughout the movie that as I'm seeing the action and the excitement and the things happening, I literally felt my jaw dropped, not out of like a surprising moment made my jaw drop, but just kind of like an in awe. I was just, I saw it twice, like I said. The first time was such a cool experience, just like watching with my mouth gaped open, basically, in excitement. So I can't say enough about how awesome that first viewing was. Again, the second viewing was fun, had a great time, enjoyed the movie, but I don't think I'm going to forget seeing episode 7 anytime soon.
And that's great. Nobody can take that away from you, but that's different than evaluating this movie as a movie.
I hear you. Yeah, okay. I totally hear what you're saying.
Now I'm going to describe my experience, okay? So I wasn't going to go opening night because I had plans. Plans got canceled. So I said to Annie Thursday morning, hey, I think I can still get a ticket for tonight. Would you mind if I went after we get the kids to bed? Oh, no, that's okay. So I get a ticket for 8:15. It's not the first showing. It's like an hour after the first showing. And I decide, okay, I'm going to get there plenty early because this place is going to be packed. So I've got my ticket already through Fandango. I get to the theater at 7:45 p.m. I walk in. There's nobody there. I mean, there's like the workers, but that's it. I get my ticket. I walk into the theater. There are 2 people in the theater.
Oh, man.
So I take my position at the back of the theater.
Which is the best spot. We can agree on that.
Yeah. And I'm thinking, okay, there's probably going to be more people here. About 8:15 rolls around, there's about 8 people in the theater.
Oh, man.
Okay. The lights go down. We have the previews. Lucasfilm comes on screen. Dead silence.
Oh.
The opening crawl starts. And I think to myself, is this going to suck? And it just keeps going. Han and Chewie walk in. Dead silence.
Okay.
Halfway through the movie, I notice there's a giant stain on the screen.
Oh.
That's really distracting. The movie ends. Dead silence. We all shuffle out and go home.
Okay. So, quite a different experience.
So I don't think I'll remember that for the rest of my life.
I admitted I started feeling emotional during different parts, even to the point where there were some times where I kind of started to feel my eyes tearing up a little bit. And I know that's so weird to say. So
I didn't.
So for you, even with that crowd, was there any parts where you felt like, I'm pretty into this?
Well, there's parts of this movie I love, but there's also problems with it. And I think it's okay to be excited that there's a new Star Wars there and that it doesn't suck. This isn't like the prequels where we were all trying to talk ourselves into liking them. Mm-hmm. Like, but I think it's okay to also say there's huge issues with this movie, and there are.
Okay. All right, let's do the top 10. I don't actually have mine ranked. Do you have your top 10 ranked?
Yeah, more or less.
I guess I could.
No, just roll with it.
All right, so I think I can make this a little bit ranked. Okay, so I'll do 10, you do 9, so on. Ready? For the good things.
Okay.
So I have 5 good things.
What if we have the same good things?
Then we'll not have 10. Then this title is a lie.
Yeah.
All right, number 10. For number 10 for me, I'll just keep it simple and say something that a lot of other people have said. And as I say these good things, you can't rebut them yet. Just say,
why not?
All right. I guess it doesn't make any sense to rebut them later. But let's try to be positive here.
Yeah.
Negative later. I thought when it came to action, settings, dialogue, characters, this felt like a genuine Star Wars film, which is something we haven't had in a while. So it fits the franchise well, and that made it all the more enjoyable.
Yeah, I'd agree, mostly. I have 1 or 2 exceptions, but yeah, I think you're absolutely right.
Okay, number 9, Ben.
Number 9. I have my issues with Kylo Ren as a villain and a character, which we'll get to, but I liked his identity. I really... I felt like that worked a lot, having him. And by the spoiler.
Oh, yeah. Whatnot. All spoilers from here on out. So just make sure you see the movie or don't care. So you liked the reveal that he was Han and Leia's son.
Yeah, I thought that was... You knew he was going to be somebody. There were rumors he was going to be Luke. Mm-hmm. That would have been terrible.
Oh, I totally agree. But, you know, Des and I were talking to each other about this, and she whispered, "Do you think it's Luke?" And I said, "I hope not."
Yeah.
That'd be the worst.
That would have been a huge problem. So, yeah, I felt like that they pulled that off. It would have felt disappointing if he took off his mask and it was just, who?
Would you have been more disappointed if it was Luke Skywalker or if it was Khan?
It's just Benedict Cumberbatch.
He's back again. JJ's like, it didn't work last time.
But everybody's going to be really into this.
Yeah.
Okay. That would have been hilarious. My name is Khan. And he gives the long pause so people can recognize it. Yeah. So that worked for me a lot.
Number eight for me, then I'll just move one of mine around so I can mention. When it comes to Kylo Ren, I appreciate that he was a conflicted villain. Like, he had a conflicted nature. So even to the point where... The more typical archetype is it's a bad guy who is, he knows he has a good side. He's fighting to maybe try to be good, even though his bad side is taking over. This is the opposite. This is a guy who is bad, feels the light, feels the good, and he's like praying that the good side won't take over.
Yeah, that didn't work for me at all.
I think it worked because we know that ultimately this is going to be a redemption story for Kylo Ren. I feel like these three movies will be... his arc becoming
right,
going back to the good side.
Yeah, that's fine.
So I like the fact that we don't see him struggling necessarily in the way that most people would, where they are trying to act out as a bad person, but the light is...
Wait. Grandpa, please help me not to do the right thing.
That's basically exactly...
I know, that's so weird.
It's interesting, though.
No, it's but they didn't pull it off well.
I thought, for me, it worked. I liked...
Well, I'll get back to that later.
I like the sort of reverse in the conflicted nature.
I'll save that for when I talk about my issues with Kylo
Ren. When it got to the big scene, I mean, all spoilers, when it got to the big scene with Han Solo, like, if you've been paying attention and you're listening to the dialogue where he's saying, I know what I need to do, but I can't. I know, and you probably knew, and a lot of the audience members knew, he's actually saying he wants to be bad, but he's having a hard time. And so
that worked for me fine.
So when he asks Han for help, Han's basically saying, yeah, it's okay to kill me, but he doesn't know that that's what he's saying. He thinks he's going to win his son back. So that whole thing worked well for me. All right, number seven for you.
I thought that the main trio of Rey and Finn and Poe all worked well. I thought they had great chemistry, especially like John Boyega as Finn. His scenes with Harrison Ford, which is fantastic. Oscar Isaac is great. I'm not entirely sold on Rey yet, but I think she'll get there. So I felt like, and there's somebody, I've seen the movie three times now, and they definitely grew on me. I think the first time I felt skeptical, you know, are these people going to be worthy replacements? Yes, I think they're going to be. They still have to get there, you know, but I feel like they've got a new solid core cast in place, and they work great.
Totally agree. This is actually my number one, and I have something to expand on what you just said. So I'll just bump this up to where we're at, six, I think. Six. So for six, talking about these new characters, first of all, the way they introduced them was perfect.
Six.
Yeah, we're going reverse.
All right.
In the sense that, so I timed it the second time I saw it. We don't get an original cast member for 40 minutes into this movie, which I think was a great move because it let the audience get established with these new characters, or vice versa, the characters established with the audience. We got to see Rey, Finn, a little of Poe, BB-8, and you started to really care about them before the original cast even showed up. I think if you had done it in a different way, where Han and Chewie and Leia were all there right from the beginning, you might have been too interested in seeing what they're doing to care about these new characters. I thought they made them immediately engaging. I love Rey. I love Finn. Even Poe, even though he had a small part at the beginning, you knew he was going to come back because I think we knew casting-wise.
Yeah, that was incredibly predictable.
Yeah, so when he fake died, even up until that point, his scenes were pretty awesome.
They were.
And then when he comes back again, you're glad to see this guy. BB-8 as a droid, I don't know. I don't want to go too far, but I thought...
Don't say it. He's fine, but do not say
he's the best. I'm just saying he's like up there. Like, I think he's way better than I anticipated. I thought this would be a huge joke, like possibly the Jar Jar Binks of these movies.
Yeah, no, but he was not. He was good. He was good.
What were you afraid I was going to say? He's like better than
R2 or something.
I mean,
oh, come on.
I'm just thinking about it. You can't beat.
You're getting so sucked into the hype on this.
You can't
movie.
Beat the original cast. But I liked them. I mean, I'll have to really think about it. I'm not going to immediately say R2 is better, but probably.
Yeah, there's no question R2 is better.
Now, I know that you and I disagree on this last one.
Well, don't I get to do one?
No, I'm still on the character.
Oh, okay.
I'm still on 6. I know that we disagree on this.
Okay.
Because we've already talked about it. But for me, the computerized character, Maz, whatever her last name is, she worked for me.
She's a dumpster fire. Second they get to her planet is when the movie starts to lose me.
I know that this is what you don't like. I know. So at the when we were out to eat together, you'd mentioned that it reminds you of the prequel trilogy.
Oh, yeah. She's straight from Phantom Menace.
I understand that in her computer-generated nature. But as a character,
no.
I liked her. I found her to be somebody I could sympathize with.
She's atrocious, and I don't care that she's computer generated. That's not my issue.
So, what were your issues? Is that coming back?
That's coming back. She's a disaster.
I really liked her.
No way.
That's where I'll stop there. 5 for you.
Han and Chewie, especially Harrison Ford. But man, you know, we don't know about Mark Hamill yet because all he did was stare awkwardly at Rey for 25 minutes at the end of the movie. Carrie Fisher sounds like she's been chain smoking for the last 40 years. I stole that line from Dan, but it's absolutely true, and she wasn't even trying. But Harrison Ford and Chewie were just fantastic in this movie. So many great lines. His chemistry with John Boyega in their scenes together is great. You know, that great line when they get to the planet and it's like, Solo, we'll come up with something. We'll use the Force. That's not how the Force works. Oh, so funny.
I totally agree. Yeah. This is my favorite line of the whole movie, and I'll come back to that.
You know, when they first step onto the Falcon, yeah, it's a great moment. Han using Chewie's crossbow is fantastic, you know, where we've never seen him do that before. You got the sense he's never actually used it. And now he's like, he uses it once. He keeps wanting to use it. Just really great. Harrison Ford owns every scene he's in. And I think, like you said, they made the right choice to not have him show up at the beginning because we get to know and like the new cast first, and then he's just icing on the cake.
Yeah, you know, I hate to keep saying this, but you and I had a lot of overlap here because another one on my list here, if I'll just go to number 4, was how the original characters were used. I think I could have used a little bit more Luke, but the way they ended the movie was fine with me. I'm excited to see a lot more of them. It's kind of interesting, just so I can add something a little bit different from what you were just saying. When it comes to behind the scenes, I think a lot of people know that Harrison Ford, for whatever reason, has always kind of hated Star Wars. Like, he started to have a rocky relationship with the whole franchise around Empire Strikes Back, asking to be killed, and then eventually returning with Return of the Jedi. But that's why they had the whole carbonite thing, because they didn't know for sure that Harrison Ford would return for the third. So when people started hearing that he was all on board for this new one, I think it was immediately suspicious. And our friend Daniel Butcher actually told me, when he saw Harrison Ford going around and being happy while advertising, he's like, oh, man, he's totally going to die in this movie.
Yeah.
Because that's what he's wanted for years. I looked up the pay scale for these different actors. Now, this is not all definitive, but it's from the reliable sources online. It looks like Harrison Ford made $25 million, while Leia and Luke were more in the 7-figure paydays.
Well, I think especially
Luke. Yeah,
Mark Hamill got more than about 50 cents. He was overpaid.
But then for Finn and Rey, we don't know the exact amount, but it's way down below $100,000 to $300,000 for each of them. I mean,
wow.
Yeah, that's
what,
like,
crappy agents. Like, this movie is, I mean, this could have been Phantom Menace bad, and it would still have made a gajillion dollars this weekend. They couldn't have negotiated more than $100,000.
Yeah,
pathetic.
So get this. Also, if you go back to 2012, I believe it was, when Disney originally purchased Lucasfilm.
Yeah.
It was for $4 billion, and all indications are they could potentially make that back with this one film.
There's no way it's going to cross $4 billion.
I mean, if you look at DVD and Blu-ray sales and all that stuff.
But not just box
and merchandising.
Office.
No, not right. just... Yeah. So everything that's wrapped into Force Awakens.
Right.
So
we'll see.
So anyways, all that to say, I agree with Ben. The original cast was used well. I think it's hilarious.
Well, what did you think of Carrie Fisher, though?
Well, I'm glad they had less of her. I mean, yes. that was, to me, that was using her well, because...
Right, that's true. That's a good point.
There's been rumors for a long time that each of these three movies is going to focus on one of the original cast members. So this was Han Solo's. The next one, we could guess, would be Luke's, so that he's training Rey.
Right.
And the third one, and this is all guesses, it would probably be focused on Leia as she reconnects with her son. That's probably how it's all going to play out. I don't know, what do you think about Leia being the focus of the third film?
Yeah, I think there's a good chance that's what they're going to do. We'll see. We'll see. Maybe they'll think better of that before they get there.
Yeah. So, all right. Oh, where are we at? Three? Number three for you?
I'm on my... Oh, no, I've got two more. Never mind. Oh, my number two is... You kind of already talked about this a little bit, but yeah, it nails the feel of the Star Wars movie, and I think that's huge, because the prequels, to me, don't feel like Star Wars movies for the most part. I mean, they have their moments and everything, but... And I don't know, it's hard to even put your finger on exactly what it is. A lot of it's the overuse of CGI, but they just don't feel like Star Wars. Part of it is that the original trilogy has, the world has this great lived-in quality, and that's all missing from the prequels. And this movie captures that. It feels like a Star Wars movie. Not perfectly. There's a few points where I'll talk about... where it doesn't feel like a Star Wars movie. I also found John Williams' score to be not bad, but probably the weakest of the seven. It wasn't very memorable.
I totally agree. In fact, I mean, it was bland.
Yeah.
There was no theme that you could really cling on to.
Mm-hmm.
And I listened for it more the second time.
Yeah, so did I.
And it still was pretty much what I got the first time.
Yeah, there's a few nice moments.
Yeah, could pick up a few, but all the moments that were nice... harked back to the original trilogy.
And that's what made it noticeable to me, is every time I'd start to get roused by the score, it would be like, oh, that's because he's brought back a theme from that didn't work. But yeah, other than that, I mean, J.J. Abrams did a great job of making this feel like a Star Wars movie.
Good. For me, number, what are we at here?
Two? Yeah.
Number two for me would be, I think, again, you're not going to agree with me on this one, but let's talk it out. For me, I love the addition of humor to this movie. Whereas the other movies maybe had a few funny parts, felt like this was more intentionally funny, where you would have... you've been talking about Finn a lot. He was pretty much nonstop hilarious throughout this whole thing. But also great character who really cared about doing the right thing. Like, the whole reason he leaves the Stormtroopers is because he just doesn't think it's right.
Right.
But then along the way, he comes up with this lie about being the resistance, but the way he presents that is funny.
It is.
You already mentioned my favorite line about where he's just like, we'll use the Force. That's not how the Force works. I just love that line. The first time I heard it, I couldn't stop laughing.
It's fantastic.
I mean, BB-8 had some funny things with no dialogue, just seeing him moving his head back and forth. I guess Finn, whenever I think of the humor, Finn's the one. Oh, except for... I like this scene. I know that you didn't, but when Kylo Ren's freaking out in that one room and the Stormtroopers are coming around the corner and then they kind of start backing up. For me, that kind of thing works. I kind of like that kind of subtle humor.
That wasn't subtle. That was like the opposite of subtle. No, I don't disagree with you on the humor, with a few exceptions, that being one of them. The other joke moment that really doesn't work is right at the beginning when Poe gets captured and is brought before Kylo Ren, and it's this tense scene.
Oh, right.
Oh, who should talk first? Do you talk first? Yeah. That was dumb.
I think there was a reason that didn't work, because same for me, that didn't really work. I think it's because you're in a Star Wars movie and you're not sure what the tone is going to be yet, because it's the J.J. Abrams version of Star Wars.
Right.
And so that was sort of the first hint, oh, this is going to try to be a little bit quick and clever, and you're not ready for that quite yet.
Well, but even the second time, third time I saw it, it doesn't work. It's because it's a tense scene. Yeah. Like, the tone of that scene isn't jokey.
You and I are on the same page for this one.
Yeah, but no. So I think the only humor point maybe we disagree on is the Stormtroopers, which it's not like the worst thing, but that's not subtle humor. And that whole sequence, well, I'll get to that, but that didn't work for me anyway.
All right, number one, Ben.
You know, there's some things in this movie I don't like. There's a lot that is good but not great. But there is a sequence in this movie that is truly great, which is Han Solo's death sequence. And it took me a couple of viewings to really be able to say, yes, I think this worked absolutely. It's not that I disliked it at first. It's just like, okay, we just killed off a main character. I need to kind of think about, did that actually work or not? And watching the movie for the third time, yes, not only did that work, but this is one of the great Star Wars moments. This was brilliant. From what you were saying earlier, you know, I have issues with some of, like, the grandpa, you know, prayer scene, but and other issues with Ren's character. But in this moment, Adam Driver nails it. Harrison Ford nails it. That conflict that you were talking about in Ren's character that doesn't work for me at other parts in the film does work for me here. The nuanced dialogue works. Everything in this sequence, it's perfect. It's shot beautifully. The cinematography is incredible in this scene. So yes, everything with Han's death is perfect.
Yeah, I totally agree. What was your first hint that we were going to have his death? Did you know early on, or where did you figure it out?
I think, like a lot of people, I'd kind of suspected, okay, you know, not exactly what Daniel was saying, but there was a sense of, okay, is Harrison Ford really going to do three of these things? Probably not. When we were getting so much of him in the movie, I got a sense, okay, maybe this is it. Yeah, and then, you know, I can't say I knew for 100% certainty when he went down there, but it just seemed like that was going to say, which isn't to say that the film set it up badly or that it was telegraphed or predictable. I think it worked. I wasn't shocked by it when it happened, but it worked.
I told you this before. I know this is such a weird situation because usually I go out of my way to not talk to you about things before the podcast, and this time we just couldn't do it. But when Chewie and Han are talking sort of on that scaffolding area and they're talking about planting the bombs, and Han says, "We'll meet back here."
Yeah.
Immediately I was like, "Oh no, what's gonna happen?" And my first instinct was that Chewie was gonna get killed,
right?
Because it just did not cross my mind that they would want to kill Han. But then as soon as we see his son and he starts heading towards him, I'm like, "Oh no, this is it." Han's gone.
And what a great way to reveal Kylo Ren's real name, too, which we hadn't heard till that point in that film. And the way Harrison Ford just yells that, it's phenomenal.
You know, if you watch in the scene where Kylo Ren is carrying Rey to the ship back on that planet, and you watch Harrison Ford's face, he almost cries out Ben there, and you can see his lips making the formation of the name Ben,
yeah.
But he doesn't let it out. It's awesome on a second viewing.
Right.
All right, Ben. Well, that was the top 10 good things. Do you want to move over to the dark side?
I do, but let me just once again reiterate, and I hope everybody got this from the first part of this conversation, I don't hate this movie, okay? I think that there needs to be a little balance brought to the Force, because I think a lot of you out there, I mean, I've seen people saying this is the best Star Wars movie that's ever.
Should we rank them for ourselves? I'd say this is the fourth best Star Wars
movie. I agree.
Movie. Okay.
For the fourth movie in a row that's the fourth best Star Wars movie.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
It's just, I love The Force Awakens, but I can't bring myself to say it's better than any of the original three, because I know in my heart the reason I feel so strongly about it is because of the original three.
Right.
So I have to be...
Yeah. And the star ratings I would give to the others, I mean, we don't worry about the prequels, but 5 stars to Empire, I would give 4.5 to A New Hope and 4 to Return of the Jedi. Okay, Return of the Jedi I love. It has flaws. It's okay to acknowledge a movie you love has flaws. I don't love The Force Awakens. I like it. Mm-hmm. It has flaws. It's a 3-star movie. When I hate a movie, everyone, I don't hold back.
Right.
I've held back and said nice things.
Yeah.
Now it's time to... unleash the Force. Okay, right. So these are in order,
okay.
Which means that the first couple you're going to feel like, well, maybe those are nitpicky. No, they're just more minor complaints. We'll get more substantive as we go
on. All right, this is all you. Here we go. Number 10.
Number 10. Well, I was about to start reading my 5 best again. Number 10, just like we experienced with the MCU, where there are large portions of those movies that feel like ads for other movies, I felt that way with this. And I'm not talking about setting up stuff for Episode 8, which is totally legitimate because that's a direct sequel and everything. Mm-hmm. But I'm talking, you know, we've already talked in the past on news about C-3PO's red arm. The only reason he has a red arm in this movie is so you'll go out and buy the comic book. That's it. Max von Sydow's character at the beginning really bothered me because in the opening crawl, he's described as an old ally.
Mm-hmm.
And he's no one we've ever heard of. Well, and then he dies, so obviously that's going to be in some kind of book or, you know, anthology movie or something. It's the only reason that character is, they choose him and describe him that way, is to set up as an ad for a future book, movie, comic book, whatever.
You know, for that particular character, I did have a couple people that I was with whispering to me, do you know who that is?
Exactly. Like, no, it's really confusing.
I have no idea who that is. Like, they thought he was in the original trilogy.
Yeah. The whole question of how did Maz get Luke's lightsaber? Mm-hmm. I mean, she directly dodges the question, which she could have answered in 5 seconds so that we can have another movie or book. And I'll talk about this more later, but the entire backstory of what happened was very poorly explained.
What happened to who?
Everybody in between Return of the Jedi and this movie.
Oh, so you're going to get back to that?
Yeah.
Because do you feel like, I'm not saying I believe this, I'm just saying it. Do you feel like in some ways, even though we see that everyone has aged 30 years, this could have just been 5 years later with as much a, like with as much well, or as little
for Han and Leia and Son, but yeah,
I guess that's true. I'm just saying, what actually changed since Return of the Jedi?
Right.
Well, are you going to tell your joke right now, or is that coming up later?
I'll come up later.
Okay. Because yeah. Okay. Well, I'll wait. The number. What are we at? 8.
Nine.
That was only, okay. Number Sorry. Nine.
I have sub points.
Okay. Number nine.
Number nine is that there's too much coincidence in this movie, and I've gone back and forth on this one because, you know, all it's Star Wars. I hold it to a different standard when it comes to coincidences, but it does get to be too much. Okay. So, you know, BB-8 goes off into the desert, then Finn and Poe crash land on the exact area of the planet where BB-8 wound up, and then Finn walks into the exact town where BB-8 wound up to be, where there just happens to be the person who, you know, is probably going to be Luke's daughter or whatever is there, and then they're running from the bad guys, and they turn, and there's the Millennium Falcon right there, and then, you know, they get into space, and I know they have the throwaway line about how Han and Chewie have trackers, but it takes them about 30 seconds to track down the Millennium Falcon once they get into space. It keeps going like that. It's like there's a certain amount a movie can get away with, especially a movie like this can get away with a lot of that, and I felt like this movie pushed the coincidence button too hard. The other point where it's really a problem is when Finn says, okay, I've got a plan to shut down the shields. He's going to go find Captain Phasma. We'll talk about her in a second. And she's just right there. This is a planet-sized base. And he runs into her. And then, you know, they go in there and they get the shields down instantly. It's like, you remember Return of the Jedi, how much effort there was to get those shields down? This took, like, they just found her. Then they walk in there and she, boop, boop, boop. And, like, there's no sense of danger or issue. It's just the movie relies so much on coincidence to get past the shield problem.
I get what you're saying, but when it comes specifically to Captain Phasma, if he had worked there for a while, he probably knew, generally speaking, where she would be. So I could see him being able to track her
down. How would he know generally, like, where she's being? You know, she's such a big deal that she's standing up there next to General Weasley as he's giving his big speech. She's all over the place. She's like one of the head honchos.
I know, but she's...
You
know,
she doesn't have an office.
This is a job, and they have probably routines.
Oh, come on.
So he probably knew.
So at a planet-sized base, they just happen to land right in the area where she is.
I'm just saying, I can
see
that.
And he worked there as a janitor.
Sanitation.
Yeah. That did not work. Too much coincidence.
I have a complaint. I'm not sure if you're... I just thought of this.
Okay,
I
don't know if this is good for you.
I don't know if this is under the coincidence banner. Are you going to talk about Poe anymore, or are you done with Poe?
I'm done with Poe.
Okay, I love Poe.
So do I.
Nothing on him particularly, but we know that he's trying to get back to Jakku to get BB-8, and then they crash, and Finn thinks he's dead, so he takes on the mission, and then later we see that Poe's back with the Resistance, so that's good. We're glad he's alive. But I don't really know, and no one really knows, why he ever left Jakku in the first place. If his whole mission was to get back there to get to his droid, why did he ever leave without his droid and go back to the Resistance?
Yeah.
And how did he get back to the Resistance? Who rescued him?
Well, I guarantee you that'll be in some kind of book.
That was probably, if I have to nitpick, that would be probably one of the biggest things. On the second viewing, I was kind of like, wait a second. What the heck? Yeah. Why would he ditch his droid?
Right.
Like, don't trust a stormtrooper you just met.
And I think that that's an example of them intentionally putting a plot hole in there so they can come back with another thing that you'll spend money on.
But to balance out that negative comment, man, I love
on the dark side
when
right
Finn
now.
Finn and Rey and BB-8 are running away from the First Order. And like you said, they're like running to one ship and it blows up. And then they go with the Millennium Falcon. That was cool.
Yeah, just happened to be there.
And then
when the places in the galaxy, it's just right there.
Right afterwards, when they were like congratulating each other, but kind of talking over each other, and it was kind of funny, and he had learned how to shoot, and she could pilot, and everything was great. How does she know how to pilot? Do you know?
No. I'm sure we'll get a book.
The Force. Okay.
No, that's not how the Force works, to quote Harrison Ford.
All right, what are we at? Eight?
Eight will be a short one. Wasted characters, especially Max von Sydow's character and Gwendolyn Christie's Captain Phasma.
Oh, I didn't even know it was her until later.
Yeah. I felt like they build her up so much, and then they could have cut her out of the movie completely, and nothing would have been lost.
So, apparently, I think someone, J.J. Abrams or someone else, said she's going to have a bigger role in the second part of this trilogy.
Okay.
However, I don't think that's even going to make sense. If you think about, last we heard, she's probably going to be thrown down a garbage chute.
Right.
And then the planet explodes. So I'm not sure how they're going to save her from that.
But, not to mention that she's the one who turned off the shields.
So, I mean, likely Snoke and Kylo Ren are going to be mad at her.
Yeah.
But
maybe that'll be the movie. Like, Phasma, what were you doing?
All right, what do we got?
Seven. Number seven is villain problems. This movie has some significant issues with the villain. First of all, Snoke and Ren feel like less interesting versions of the Emperor and Vader, respectively. I mean, especially, they drew the comparisons way too close in terms of that, you know, Emperor hologram from Empire Strikes Back with Snoke here, but he's going to be 20,000 feet high because that'll make him intimidating.
And you said you don't think he's actually a giant?
No, that would be pretty dumb.
Yeah.
But the bigger issue is Ren. And again, I like who he is. I like a lot they do with this character. I really thought Adam Driver did a great job in terms of acting. But there are a number of issues. I already mentioned the praying to Vader, which I will just disagree on that. I thought it was a really awkward scene, and I felt that way every time. You know, it's like, Grandpa, help me to be the best bad guy I can be. But whatever. The bigger issues are that his powers are inconsistent.
Yeah.
Like, in different parts of the movie, the beginning of the movie, you know, he stops the laser bolt midair.
Which was awesome.
And you're like, whoa, this guy must be great. But then he seems like he's barely even trained in other parts of the movie. Uh-huh. You know, and then
Well, they flat out say he hasn't finished his training.
Right, exactly. And then we're supposed to believe in the backstory that he was able to beat Luke and, you know, other trainee Jedi when he and the Knights of Ren did their thing.
Well, now, the thing you're talking about right now, I feel like it's semi-speculation based on outside knowledge we have. So we don't know that there was anyone else training with Luke other than Kylo Ren, for sure.
Yeah, they said a new generation of Jedi.
But one person can be...
Okay, that would be pretty dumb.
The start of a new generation. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Also, I've heard mention of the Knights of Ren, and there was one line in the movie about it.
Yeah.
But what are the Knights of Ren?
When Rey goes down into the Dagobah tree, I mean the basement... And she has her little vision.
Yeah.
There's a scene of like Kylo Ren with a group of people behind.
I know what you're talking about.
I have no idea.
But they call them the Knights of Ren in this movie once, and then as a person that reads sci-fi news like you and me, we've heard this term.
Yeah.
And not his last name. They call him Kylo Ren, but I wonder if all of them are like something Ren.
Right.
All the Knights.
That's like the Darth of this new series.
Yeah. You think so?
Yeah.
So are these? So Sith are usually in groups of two. So you think this is beyond the Sith? This is a different group of dark side users?
I don't know. But anyway, that's okay. Fair enough on that one. But inconsistent powers that he at least did something to be able to overcome Luke, but then he's not able to. And I know he's injured at the end of the lightsaber battle, but like he's not able to stop Finn and Rey there. It's just pretty silly. His temper tantrums are horrible in this movie. He seems a lot closer to Anakin than Vader. Mm-hmm. And I consider prequel Anakin and Vader to be completely different characters. The temperaments between the original trilogy and prequels are very different. He feels like the next step of prequel Anakin rather than an early, still getting used to things Vader. Mm-hmm. And it was just dumb. Like, you know, it once was like, okay, this is a little weird. And then he does it again. It's like, okay, chill out, buddy. He's a moron. Like the scene that really gets me is when they're on the planet and he notices that Rey has the part of the map in her mind. It's like, oh, we don't need that BB-8 character anymore. But the whole point of getting BB-8, and we're told this earlier in the movie, the Empire, I mean, the First Order's primary directive isn't to capture BB-8 for their own purposes, but to stop him from falling into the hands of the Resistance. Completely dumb. He's a moron. And then what's he going to do? Like, he sees it in his mind. He, okay, somebody give me a piece of paper. I got to scribble that out for you. You know, he's an idiot. He's an idiot.
Well, let me
finally.
Wait, let me agree and then say something else. I agree with the temper tantrums.
Yeah.
That was too much. One would have been fine, but two was too much. I wish I'd saved the one for the stormtroopers backing up scene instead of having it happen.
That was too funny.
But to defend him taking Rey, I agree he missed the point of getting BB-8, but I think he sensed that something was special and powerful about Rey. And so he...
Yeah, so here's Stormtrooper. You take her up. I got to go get that droid.
I totally get what you're saying. I just think maybe he got caught up in, this might be more important than the droid. I get what you're saying,
but
though.
See, you're playing fan fiction now, because that's not what the movie says. He says, we have all we need. We don't need the droid anymore. He says that in the movie.
I hear what you're saying. I'm based on what I've seen, I could see that being the reason. But okay, continue on.
And finally, he apparently models for romance novel covers in his part time.
What, you didn't like his look?
He's like dreamy hunk man, you know. He's like, oh, somebody love me. Anyway.
Can I do a complaint about Kylo Ren? I did not like, you know how they have the new General Tarkin? I don't know what his name is. The red-headed
General
guy.
Weasley.
Yeah, General Weasley. I didn't like how Weasley didn't respect Kylo Ren, because that makes us as an audience respect Kylo Ren less. So right. When they go and stand before Supreme Leader together, they... Like, I feel like it's the same thing that happened with General Tarkin and Darth Vader, how
right.
General Tarkin seemed
Grand
above.
Moff Tarkin.
Grand right. Moff Tarkin.
You've already taken some hits for your lack of Grand Moff Tarkin.
So Grand Moff Tarkin definitely seemed above Vader
right.
in New Hope. But then going forward, it's like Vader is second in command.
And Vader holds his own against Tarkin throughout that movie. This, like, you only have one kid. I have two kids, and so what happens a lot of times...
You have more than two kids. You have four kids.
Yeah, four kids. But I have at least two kids for the purpose of this. Like, what happens...
I have two kids I like.
That's right.
Four kids total.
One kid runs into the room and starts tattling. The other one's, like, trailing behind yelling. Like, the scene at the end where General Weasley's in the room. He's, like, tattling to Snoke. And Kylo Ren, I did do it. And, you know, yeah, there's stuff like that that doesn't work.
So I did not like that. I kind of wish that General Weasley would have been afraid of Kylo Ren.
Yeah.
Like, everyone else seems to give him respect, except for... Like, do you know what the org chart is
no.
for the First Order?
Like, and the Tarkin
Captain,
thing...
Because Captain Phasma definitely reports to Weasley.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So who reports to Ren? Just the Knights of Ren?
Just himself.
Okay, go ahead. What were you going to say?
The other reason the Tarkin Vader thing works is that Tarkin is, you know, he comes across as a grizzled veteran. He's been in there. General Weasley seems like he's 25 years old. And say, I got promoted!
I hated his speech.
Oh, yeah.
When his face was shaking.
The Nazi speech?
Yeah, and I hated that the stormtroopers lifted their hands in the Nazi salute.
Yeah, you just expected them to go, Sieg Heil!
Like, every bad guy does a Nazi salute? Like, it's not Hydra.
I was talking to my dad about this yesterday, because we saw the movie with him last night, and he had some of the same complaints I did. I was like, you know, they made it even less subtle than George Lucas did, and that's saying something. It's not like the stormtroopers were exactly a subtle metaphor in the first one,
yeah.
But they unsubtled George Lucas.
All right, number six.
Number six. It contradicts the other movies in terms of how the Force and lightsabers work. And this is something that really bugs me because, okay, I know that they kind of wrote themselves into some corners with Rey where she's got to get out. And so she does the whole, these aren't the droids you're looking for
thing. Oh, yeah, I love that.
No, but see, here's the reason it doesn't work. It's because in A New Hope, when Obi-Wan does that, Luke is like, whoa, you know, this is some crazy stuff. And then he goes through all this training and he's barely able to lift rocks halfway through Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
And it's like the Force is something that takes a lot of time and effort where she's just like, well, maybe I'll give this a shot and then it works. And then she's able to pull the lightsaber halfway across the forest later on in the movie before the lightsaber fight. Whereas in Empire Strikes Back, we see Luke like struggling to get it when it's 3 feet away from him. The Force is something that Luke struggles to control. Rey's just like, well, let's see what happens.
I have a theory, And this, you can say, but this
the,
is
the theory is not.
I know, but I this is an explanation, and I think is legit.
Okay.
I think if we're saying that Rey is Luke's daughter, which all indications are that's the case.
Yeah.
I think he's been training her from an early age, and she doesn't remember her training. And that when Kylo Ren said that thing about, I can teach you the Force.
You need a teacher.
She kind of has the almost an awakening moment where she's like, the Force. And it was almost as if something clicked in her from her previous training, because that's when she starts to kind of move forward.
That moment's kind of funny to me, because she shuts her eyes, and he's just like, what are you doing? I'm like, buddy, you got the little cross guard things? Just twist your lightsaber. Yeah. You'll strike her arm off. You'll win. I know that some of this is because they had to have a lightsaber fight, and there's nobody else who can have a lightsaber fight. If you're right about that theory, yeah. I will redact this point. Okay. But until that comes, until they do something to deal with that, they have up to this point, with what we know, her character seems to contradict how the Force works.
Get this. Now, having just read Dune, and you used to always tell me George Lucas was heavily inspired by Dune for Star Wars, seeing that scene where she used the Force to get... escape there.
Yeah.
It was exactly like the voice from Dune.
Right.
That's what went through my head and said, did you feel the
same? I didn't think that, but I think you're right.
Okay.
All right.
Number five.
Too many derivative moments in this movie. And I'm not just talking about the little callbacks like, oh, here's the training droid. Oh, here's the chess set. You know, all those things where JJ's like, remember the first movie, guys? You know, Maz's place, we'll talk more about her in a second, but was a direct repeat of the cantina. You know, the map to Luke.
Hey, what's the cantina called in the movie?
Mos Eisley's cantina.
Yeah, and her name is Maz. Weird.
Oh my gosh. That's even more stupid than I thought it was. The map to Luke is exactly like the Death Star plans. I mean, you know, the movie, I'm not even talking about how it felt like a reboot of A New Hope, which it essentially did in a lot of ways.
It followed all the same beats, really.
Yeah. The planets, Tatooine is exactly like Jakku, and then we have a snow planet, the Starkiller base, like Hoth, and then we have a green planet like Endor, and then we have Yavin 4, where the Resistance is, and, you know, you just go on and on and on. It just felt so derivative. We'll talk about the Death Star in a sec. I mean, the Starkiller base in a second. Rey going down into the basement is exactly like the Dagobah cave. These are the same problems JJ had with Into Darkness, but he's getting a pass here because people are caught up in the hype. And it doesn't mean it's a terrible movie, but he's just... J.J. Abrams has issues in his movies with relying too much on nostalgia, and we saw that in Super 8. But the reason that movie didn't work for you and me is because we didn't have the nostalgia. We saw that in Into Darkness, where it didn't work because he lost the Star Trek fans because his movie didn't feel like Star Trek. He's getting away with it here because his movie feels like Star Wars, but the guy relies too much on nostalgia to make his movies work. It's all over the place in this film.
I won't disagree, because I can be honest with my own feelings and know a lot of what I was feeling is based on how I feel about those original movies. So,
right.
All right, number four.
Number four, there's poor world building in this movie. The relationship between the First Order, Resistance, and Republic is very poorly explained.
I got it better on the second time, though.
So did I, but it's throwaway lines. It felt like they were so worried about going down the prequel trap of, we're going to talk about tax negotiations for 3 hours, which thank God they didn't do that. This is the better error, but it's still an error to not touch that stuff at all. And it's like, well, wait a second. You know, so the Starkiller base shoots down those four planets, which apparently everybody in the galaxy can see, because space is really tiny in J.J. Abrams' mind. And that takes out the entire Republic? Really? They have all their fleet and all their government on four planets? Are you kidding? It's just, like, it's just dumb. There's very poor world building in terms of what happened between Return of the Jedi in this movie.
Good news, though. You told me when we were out to eat this weekend that you thought Coruscant was one of the places that got destroyed. It was not that planet that I can't say. Coruscant?
Yeah, Coruscant.
It was not that.
Right, but it looked exactly like it, which just goes back to what I was saying a second before, that all the new planets in this movie are not new planets. They're just old planets with new names.
So the first time I saw it, I couldn't follow how the Republic and the Resistance worked together. But then in the opening crawl, it says that the Republic supports the Resistance.
Yeah, but we still don't know what the difference is between them.
I mean, it feels like it's the army of the Republic. Like, it, It might as well be the military arm of the Republic.
But then...
That's what I think.
No. Because that doesn't work because General Weasley says we're going to destroy their fleet when they fire their laser at the four planets the Republic exists on. There's just too much there that they... This movie was supposed to be a continuation of the story. It wound up being more of a reboot.
Yeah, I can see that.
And that's a problem to me because they're trying to have their cake and eat it too, and you can't just have 30 years pass and then not explain anything. What happened?
Man, but this cake was so good.
Yeah. I mean, it is good, but it's got issues. All right. Big three.
Number three. Here we go.
Maz. Oh, Maz doesn't work for so many reasons.
I think most people are going to disagree with you.
Fine.
I don't know if I'm alone in this, but I loved her.
Fine. Okay. I'm going to tell you why. Because when we get to Maz's house, or whatever it is.
Mos Eisley.
Mos Eisley. First thing that doesn't work is she's got a dorky, stupid statue of her up there on top of the building. Dumb. Anyway, that's just a nitpick. Okay, so the way that this place is presented to us is that it is supposed to be yet another wretched hive of scum and villainy. And now we're going to see one of Han Solo's smuggling friends and everything. And, like, these people should have this kind of seedy character to them. And then we get the movie's attempt to reduplicate Yoda in this. And it doesn't work. And then we get the whole really cheesy, I see your eyes, and they have fear in them. Like, what is going on at this?
That's not exactly what you said, but I'll let it pass.
Pretty much. And then, you know, she's just so self-righteous during this whole thing. She's obnoxious to a fault, where she's like, oh, take this lightsaber, and you're right back into it. I won't put him on a ship. You have to do it, Han. It's like, this is not somebody who Smuggler Han would be friends with. And it contradicts, again, in this sequence, they're trying to have their cake and eat it, too. They're trying to give you the wretched hive of scum and villainy, which was about to work. It's derivative, but it was going to work. And then we throw in a moralistic character is this place?
Okay, let me agree with one part you're saying. When they introduce the idea of her, when he's telling Finn about her, wait, is it Finn?
Yeah.
Rey?
No, both. Both.
Yeah. It makes her sound like she's going to be a little bit scary. Like, right. Watch out. Don't make her mad. But then when you meet her, she's kind of like a sweet old grandma.
Oh, no. And the actress who played her, really annoying voice.
I didn't feel that way.
Her character is cringeworthy to me. Like, was dreading, by the third time I watched this movie, I couldn't stand any second with her on screen.
Man, I shouldn't say, it's not like she's my favorite character, but I never felt cringeworthy over her.
Oh, I mean, not like Jar Jar Binks bad, but bad. She's not Jar Jar Binks cringe. She's Boss Naz cringe.
I don't even know who that is.
That's like the fat Gungan.
Oh, the leader of the Gungans?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, this will be another one. We're interested to hear from you listeners about what you think. I'm interested to know specifically about this. Am I alone? Like, do I like this character for some unknown reason, or is Ben wrong in this
Everybody
case?
I've been talking to isn't a fan.
Oh, really? Interesting. No. Yeah, let us know your thoughts, not just on this, but on Force Awakens in general, at feedback@thescifichristian.com. All right, Ben, number two.
Bad/derivative plot. Lot of issues with the plot, from the fact that they just did a reboot of A New Hope. We already talked about that a little bit. That's a problem. The Death Star is the biggest issue here, but let's talk about this Luke Skywalker map for a second. It makes no sense, okay? So the Empire we know has the whole map. Right? Except for this tiny little piece.
Order.
Yeah, That wasn't even an attempt to be funny. That's just what they are. So they have the whole map, except for one tiny little piece. Send search parties there. Like, just see this part of the map that isn't filled in? Let's look there. See how the orange arrow is pointing right in there? Like, check that. So there's no point in this map existing.
Okay, I'm with you so far.
Okay. I almost said the Rebellion. The Resistance has the map too, but it's hidden inside of R2 is in low power mode and then just wakes up for no.
I have a theory on that too. I think Rey's presence woke up R2.
She was there before.
No, she wasn't.
Yes, she was.
No, she was not. The first time she comes on the scene, R2 reactivates, which goes back to my earlier point, which is I think they've had interactions in her childhood.
Okay, again, if you're right, I'll redact that criticism. For now, it feels like an arbitrary plot hole.
I totally agree with you about this map.
Yeah.
It's for also, where did the map come from? Luke would have had to have made it himself.
Right.
So it's not the best hiding strategy to have a map to get there. But,
exactly.
Okay, I'm with you on this.
Then Death Star 3 is horrible. This is horrible.
But they made it clear it's way bigger.
Yeah. You know, you haven't ever seen Team America, but there's a line in Team America where they're like, the terrorists are planning 9/11 times 100. And that kept going through my head as I was watching this. It's like, it's the Death Star times 100. The scene where they go over the Star Killer base plans is just comical to me. Like, the first thing, what do we even call a weapon? And then the very next line is, it's another Death Star. It's like, everybody's thinking that. Yeah. Like, no, but it's way bigger. And then they're going over the plans. Well, what if we, you see this little ventilator thing here? What if we shoot that and it'll blow up the whole thing? It's so derivative. It's horrible. And the thing is,
it was a little harder to blow it up though this time than in New Hope. You gotta admit.
No, it wasn't.
They had to go in there, blow up the oscillator so they could get in there. First, the shields had to be down, which we already talked about. Then they had to fly in and blow up all those different things around in the circle. And Poe had to then get out. I mean, it was...
Okay.
It was intense.
Not only did they repeat the Death Star, they did it worse than A New Hope. But they also did it worse than the Return of the Jedi, which in itself was derivative of A New Hope. They didn't... This is the fourth Star Wars movie, not counting the prequels. You know, for those of us who just deny their existence, so 3 out of 4 movies now contain Death Star-like things. It's like, and for people who are excusing this, and I've seen so many fanboy defenses of this, so if Episode 8 comes out and there's Star Killer Base 2, like, at what point do you say enough is enough? This is a problem.
It worked for me.
No, it didn't. It's a terrible move. This is so bad. Death Star, you know, and then...
It didn't bother me.
This weapon makes no sense. It sucked up the entire sun in 2 shots. They ran out of ammo in 2 shots.
It's not... it won't be very reusable as a weapon.
Yeah.
Because they can't really move the planet to another sun area.
Right. They're done.
So it's... It probably is a big investment, so you really have to get that first shot right. So I hear what you're saying.
So if the Resistance had just evacuated their planet, they could have let them destroy it and gone, okay, guys, we don't have to worry about that anymore. There's no tension in terms of this weapon. It's so repetitive. It's so derivative. It's an insult to try and throw out another Death Star again. This is the thing in the movie I hate.
Okay. But there's still number one.
There's still number one.
All right. Number one.
My biggest issue with this movie is that by virtue of deciding to be a reboot instead of a continuation, well, also technically being a continuation, it disrespects what happened in the original trilogy. I sent you a text on Saturday when Dan and I were about to watch a movie, and I said, we're about to sit down for Episode 7: The Jedi Didn't Return After All. Mm-hmm. Okay, the whole point of the original trilogy was the return of the Jedi. Like, that's not just a title. That's what the entire story is thrusting toward. Mm-hmm. And then the establishment of the Republic. And by having Luke go off on his emo temper tantrum in his little planet, the Jedi didn't return. And the Republic was nothing. It got taken out in 2 seconds. And we're right back to the rebellion again. And they just reset everything to what it was. I would have had more respect, and I know they couldn't have gotten away with this, but I would have had a lot more respect with them saying, we're just going to do a straight reboot than this. Because what this says is everything you thought that was accomplished at the end of Return of the Jedi doesn't matter. And I think that's a slap in the face to all of us who have grown up loving that story and wanting to know what happens next. And J.J. Abrams' answer is the same thing that happened before. And that drives me nuts. Now, if I think about this movie as a reboot, you can kind of get over that. But it wasn't billed to us as a reboot. This was billed as Episode 7. And that's a huge problem. And to me, and I know I said this on Saturday, and you and Dan both disagreed with me, but here, what midichlorians were to the mythology of the Force, this is to the plot of the original trilogy. And it's a huge, huge problem. It's the one thing that doesn't just annoy me, but makes me angry when I think about this movie.
Yeah, I mean, I do wish that the results of Episodes 4, 5, and 6 were that they had an almost happily ever after. I mean, of course, now we get more movies.
Yeah.
But it's not just that we get more movies. It's as if for what's been happening these last 30 years. It doesn't really look like they've accomplished anything that they were originally setting out to accomplish.
Right. And I'm not wishing for a happily ever after. Like, I'm not... The Expanded Universe novels weren't great literature, but they managed to set a story where the things that were accomplished at the end of Return of the Jedi mattered, and then there was more story after. Okay, so they did that. Like, they accomplished that. It's possible to tell Star Wars stories without doing what J.J. and company did here. And I just think it's... I think it's a slap in the face to that story. And I don't think they intended it that way, but by being so over the top with paying homage to the original trilogy, they wound up negating it. And that does, like, as a fan, that's my nostalgia rage here.
Yeah.
Is that as a fan, as somebody who loves that story, they just wiped it off the map. Mm-hmm. And that does upset me as a fan.
I think I can understand what you're feeling. I don't think I felt the same way, but I understand your feelings in this case. I want to change the subject slightly, but not completely, to Luke Skywalker. So we had hoped that he would build this whole new Jedi Council after Return of the Jedi. We find out he started teaching potentially one or more.
And apparently not Leia.
Young Jedi. Yeah, Leia didn't
my
really pick it up.
My sister has. Can you imagine that conversation after Return of the Jedi? So, Luke, when do I start my training? I got a thing.
Yeah. So as this movie was going on and on, I started to think we could easily go this whole movie without seeing Luke Skywalker.
Yeah.
I thought I would have been surprised, but it could have happened. I think most movies would have ended with Chewie and Rey and R2 flying off, and then they go to the closing credits, and that's what I was personally expecting. So then when we got the kind of extended go to the island, run into Luke, I was starting to think, are they going to have a much longer scene than I'm expecting at this point? Or are they just going to have them get face-to-face and the movie ends? And so, obviously, that's how it ended. Did you like that ending? Did it work for you?
Yeah, it did. Okay. After it's been pointed out to me that they stare at each other for almost a comically long time, I can't not see that now.
I know.
But
I noticed it immediately because it's as if they're on pause, but they're not, because she just looks at him, holds up the lightsaber, they stare so that...
There's probably one too many cuts back and forth there.
Well, because, we get him looking at her with the hood, she looking at him, then he takes off the hood, she's still staring at him, and then they go to the high shot, kind of like...
Oh, you know what they should have done? Pose line from the beginning that didn't work. Oh, how does this work? Do I talk first? Do you talk first? They should have saved it for there.
Oh, man.
Last line of the movie.
Last line of the movie.
We leave with a chuckle.
So where do you think it goes from here, Ben?
Well, I think it's going to go in a good place, actually. I am far more hopeful. Even though I have a lot of issues with this movie, I think it set up episode 8 well. I think Rian Johnson is a much better director than Abrams. I think the 90% of my issues with this movie, I feel like, are directly tied to issues that have come up with Abrams' storytelling before.
Okay.
So I'm confident Rian Johnson's going to do a good job. I'm excited. I don't know. I hope that wherever it goes from here, it's a continuation of what they've set up here. I hope they don't try and do Empire Strikes Back 2.
Well, they're definitely going to go a dark route with this next one.
Yeah, well, that's fine. I'm not talking about tone. I'm talking about like just how this hit all the plot points of A New Hope. If they do that with Empire Strikes Back, then it's really going to be like, okay, you guys should have just manned up and done a reboot.
What if Rey's not Luke's daughter? We could have a scene where Kylo Ren says, "Rey, I am your brother."
Yeah, that would be a little... I wouldn't buy that.
Yeah, because
Han and Leia...
They would remember if they had a daughter.
Unless Luke was just a huge jerk who went and stole memories from everybody. It's like, oh, you don't get to remember your daughter.
Do Jedis have that power?
Well, they didn't have the power to read people's minds either, or stop lasers mid-flight, and that happened, so...
That laser thing was cool, though. Oh, man. What if that is... So, when I left the theater the first showing, the first time I saw it, I was thinking and telling my friends, I hope Rey is not related to the Skywalkers, because you don't want every single character to be a part of the Skywalkers. But then, the more I thought about it, this whole saga so far is about the Skywalker family. Anakin, Luke, Leia in some ways, and now maybe Rey. So, I think the chances are very high that she is in that lineage. So she has to be, probably. I mean, I could be wrong. She could be just a random person. But because of the flashback and the vision scenes we saw, she's either Luke's daughter or Leia and Han's daughter.
Yeah.
The person that she was left with, did you get, you know who that is after seeing it three times? The person kind of holding her arm.
Annoying guy.
There's lots of... Are you talking about?
The guy who... That's mine!
Yeah. The guy who said, yeah, one quarter rations.
Yeah, yeah, I figured that.
That's
out.
The guy that had her.
Because if you're going to abandon your daughter, you want to leave her in capable hands.
But was she a slave? Is that what you got? Because she was a scavenger. We know that. But she wasn't a slave to that
guy. No, I got the sense that he was just like a... He was trading food for...
Right. But I mean, why leave her with him? Like, he wasn't a guardian or anything.
No. I don't know.
Do you think he's going to end up being a good guy?
I hope we never see him again. He really annoyed me.
We have to see him again because it's his hand holding her in that flashback.
Yeah. It was convenient that she hasn't changed her hairstyle or clothing choices once.
That was very convenient. So who is it? I'm saying Luke. Who do you think?
Yeah, I'd say Luke. I don't think it would work to have him.
A twin. Okay. Yeah, that'd be so bad if he erased their memories.
Yeah.
All right. So what's next for Kylo Ren in the second movie?
I think we'll see him be super evil. I do think that they'll repeat some of the themes of Empire Strikes Back, and that this will be Kylo Ren totally selling out to the dark side.
I think that there's going to be a time gap between 7 and 8 so that Rey has been receiving training from Luke, and Kylo Ren has been receiving training from Snoke.
Yeah.
Because they said, you have to now come and complete your training. So I think they'll both be way more powerful, and the final battle has to be between those two, and somebody's arm is getting cut off.
Oh, yeah.
Or definitely. Hand or something. But yeah. I thought there was a few scenes where I thought maybe Kylo Ren's hand would get cut off by Rey in this one, but you got to set it for the second part of the trilogy.
That's true. But we know that they're on different paths. Because at the end of their fight, a giant chasm opened between them.
That's right.
What a subtle moment.
I kind of was sensing that there was a romance brewing between Finn and Rey, but then when she kissed him on the cheek goodbye, she said, "My friend is Finn in the friend zone."
Oh, totally.
I think it's something between Rey and Finn. I think they are the love connection.
What if they're brother and sister?
Rey and Poe?
No, Rey and Finn.
That would be a surprise. What about Poe?
All I'll say is this. You want to hear a fan theory? Here's a fan theory. Boba Fett.
Poe. What does that even mean?
Reformed Boba Fett.
So you think Poe is Boba Fett?
You heard it here first.
Wow.
He's aged well over the last 30 years. Yeah.
Okay, that's a great theory.
Boba Fett. We could start a hashtag. Yeah. That should be trending on Twitter tomorrow.
Oh, man. Well, I'm sure there's a lot more that could be said about Star Wars The Force Awakens, but we've actually had kind of a long episode for our first episode back in a while, so
yeah.
Let's call it here, and then we're going to go on, and we're going to record for you tonight
end-of-the-year
listener appreciation jubilee for 2015. However, that's not the next episode you'll be hearing, because we will release that on January 31st this year, so
yeah.
Watch for that coming soon. But for now, Ben.
Now, have I convinced... You don't have to give it a star rating.
Okay.
You stick with your five, but have I convinced you... This is not truly a five-star movie.
Well, here's what I was thinking. If I'm saying that Force Awakens is my fourth favorite,
yeah,
I'd have to say that all of them are five-star movies to me, and I don't know that that's how I would have ranked them previously.
Right.
I just know my experience was so high, I don't know how I could not say five. I'll have to think about it. I'll just have to think about where it all lands after I calm down from this high The Force Awakens gave me.
After my first viewing, I had it at a 2.5, and I came up a little bit.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's all from here. I'm Matt Anderson.
I'm Ben DiBono.
We are the Sci-Fi Christians.
And let the hate mail begin.
I think they'll understand your position.
Oh, I think I'm going to get ripped on this one.
I can't wait to hear what people think about The Force Awakens. Again, write us at feedback@thescifichristian.com. Actually, let's just do this real quick. Hello, everybody.
Whoa!
Welcome and thank you for listening to The Sci-Fi Christian. If you'd like to send us some feedback, you can do so at
feedback@thescifichristian.com.
We are also available to receive your voicemails at
612-421-21-SFC.
612-421-21-SFC. We're on Facebook, we're on Twitter. YouTube. And yeah, we love hearing from you. You can always comment on our Axel website, which many listeners do. So thanks for all of your feedback. We'll be back reviewing feedback in January. But yeah, for now, that's it.
I'm even doing some YouTube videos these days.
Oh yeah, plug that real quick, and then I'll
I've done 3 out of 4 in a series called "Why Would You Watch That?" Looking at the role of objectionable content in art. And some I don't know who it was, but somebody commented and offered to come and clean my office.
That's very kind.
Because she said it was very messy.
You should take her up on that.
Anybody who wants to come and do some free cleaning is welcome.
All right. Well, so long, folks.
Yeah, bye.